What's up, cyber and crypto hobbies? Today is April 7th of 2025. This is episode number 124 of the Cybersecurity and Cryptocurrency Podcast. I'm your host, Eric English. All the views and opinions on this podcast are solely my opinions and do not reflect the opinions of my employer. If you want to follow me on X, I'm at CyberCryptoGuy. All right, so there's a lot to get caught up on. I've taken a little hiatus for really no good reason other than just working a lot. But through that, I've got a lot of fun new topics to discuss and things I want to ramble about. So on the hit list today is incident response and ransomware. So I want to talk a little bit about those and kind of deep dive into those just to kind of paint a picture of what, you know, what to look for and what to do during an incident and kind of how to respond. Also going to talk about some news related stuff. There's so much ransomware going around right now. There's a few different ransomware pieces we'll talk about. And then, of course, we're also going to talk about the cryptocurrency side of things and the markets and all that kind of fun stuff, too. So to jump right in here, we'll start with incident response. And how do you respond to a security incident? What do you do? How do you prepare? All those kinds of things. You never are fully prepared for an incident. You can try to be prepared. You can hope that you're prepared. But oftentimes you'll find that when that incident happens, you didn't prepare for one little piece that, you know, you probably should have. So a few things to kind of keep in mind when there is some sort of an incident. So biggest thing you can do is have some sort of incident response tabletop tests. Now, there's lots of ways to kind of gamify that if you wanted to try the gamified side of things, which is super fun. It actually keeps people, you know, much more engaged than it would with just some PowerPoint slides. So I would highly recommend, you know, a gamified incident response tabletop test. There are plenty of them to choose from. There's the Dungeons and Dragons style and plenty of others, too. So find one of those that's fun. But at the same time, try to tweak it so that it fits your particular environment. So oftentimes those, you know, kind of pre-made Dungeons and Dragons style things are not necessarily specific to your environment. So that's where you kind of have to make it your own, if you will. So, but even with doing that, you're still not going to be fully prepared because that's kind of a fun way to do it. You still want to have your standard, I call them standard or basic tabletop tests where you talk about, you know, a ransomware event and then what you're going to do to recover. How do you prevent it? How do you block it? How do you stop it? How do you prevent the spread? All those kinds of things. So kind of the first step, at least in some of the experiences that I've had in the past, kind of step one is to isolate your systems as much as you can. You can do this a lot of different ways. Through your EDR tool, you can typically do this. You can isolate your critical systems, like your servers and things like that, so that nothing can talk to them other than your EDR tool. So that's probably step one. Another really good step would probably be to disconnect your networks, right? So if you've got, let's say, I don't know, a full mesh type network to 100 different locations, well, you may want to turn that full mesh VPN or whatever it is, turn those connections off. What that can do is that can limit the spread, especially if it's ransomware, and really help you, you know, prevent this ransomware from spreading to other sites, other locations, no matter where those locations happen to be. So cutting off all those connections, isolating systems first, that would be my suggestion. So go into your EDR tool, isolate all your servers, just put them all in isolation. From there, get onto your firewalls, disable all those VPN connections. And so this is what's really tricky. You may have to do that at a lot of different locations, depending on how you're set up. If it's some sort of a full mesh VPN, you want to find a way to disable all those at once if you can. If you don't have that capability, it may be a lot of manual work to go into each one and turn off those VPNs. However, if you have like a hub and spoke type of environment, that could be a lot easier, right? If everything connects into a central hub or data center, anything like that, and it's hub and spoke, you can cut everything off at the hub, and all those other sites would not be able to talk to each other without that centralized hub. So that's another way to kind of do it there. But so isolate your systems, and then isolate your systems even more by cutting off those connections. And then from there, I would even go as far as unplugging the internet at those locations just to be super duper safe. You never know what's really going on, and just isolate yourself as much as you can. So once you've kind of done those steps, now you're kind of in the eradication phase. So you've already detected it, right, with your EDR tool, your EDR vendor called you, or your SOC called you, freaking out. So you've already detected it. You've already started going into lockdown mode. Now you're locked down. What do you do next? Well, you try to start eradicating. This is where it can be very, very challenging, especially now that you're isolated. You've isolated systems, you've isolated networks. It can make it very, very challenging. However, if you have, you know, the right EDR tool, you can still isolate, but create, you know, an outbound connection on your firewall so you can reconnect the internet and say, hey, only allow outbound connections to Sentinel One or CrowdStrike, whatever it is, right? So as part of your incident response playbooks, you still want to disconnect the internet first and do all those other previous steps I just mentioned. Once everything is disconnected, get onto those firewalls. You'd have to get to them internally, right? Now that you're all disconnected, get on those firewalls and allow only traffic inbound and outbound from, let's say, CrowdStrike or Sentinel One, whoever your EDR vendor is. That way, you're preventing any other internet traffic to and from your systems, and you're basically still in kind of an isolation mode, but you can still administer your systems. Now, one thing you can also do is stage these incident response settings in your firewalls and in your routers and switches, everything else. You can pre-stage all these things so that when an event happens, you can have a playbook that says, okay, I'm going to log into firewall B at location B and, you know, turn on this rule that says block all traffic except for CrowdStrike or Sentinel One traffic only. And of course, you got to get all that information ahead of time. You need to get that information from Sentinel One or from CrowdStrike to know what those IP ranges are, those host names are, whatever they are that you need to plug in to connect. You're going to want to get all that information up front as best you can. So now that you're kind of isolation, you've reconnected the internet, but only to your EDR vendor, now you can start really eradicating. And this is where you can use that EDR tool to help you, you know, detect all the different threats that are on all your different systems. If you've got some sort of a retainer with your EDR vendor, you can have them help you with cleanup efforts, fun stuff like that. And then once you're kind of in a comfortable spot there, you can start deciding, okay, which systems do we need to restore from a backup? Which systems just need to be left offline or left isolated? So there's a lot of decision making that needs to go on as part of all this. Once you've kind of gone through the eradication phase, your EDR vendor says everything is good to go, no other detections, no other threat actor activity in your network. I love that word, threat actor. No other threat actor activity in your network. And they are confident that, you know, all the systems are as clean as they're going to get. You've restored backups, all that kind of fun stuff. Then you can start going into kind of your recovery mode. And you sort of are during the eradication phase. You will do some recovery steps, right? You may restore a backup of a server, whatever it is, right? So you may be doing things like that. If it's on a workstation, you might as well just reimage it because you're not going to have a backup, and the safest thing to do is reimage. Now, even on servers, if a server was compromised, it's probably not a bad idea to go ahead and just rebuild it. Right, you've got a backup of the data, hopefully, so you can take that backup and restore it. But, you know, in the meantime, you need to just rebuild that server, especially if it's a critical server like your domain controller or something like that. Right. So make sure that you're doing, you know, you're any kind of critical server. You've got a backup of the data. Go ahead and just rebuild it, right? Especially if it was compromised or encrypted. Another step that you want to take during the eradication phase, again, depending on what the bad guys did, is you're going to want to reset pretty much every single password in Active Directory. This is a daunting task, and it is not fun, and it is not easy, unless you have some sort of an administration tool to help you with this. But regardless, you need to reset all passwords. You also need to reset the Kerberos password. And then you got to wait 10 hours and reset it a second time. And then, oh, by the way, I would highly also recommend resetting passwords again for all the accounts. That way you've rotated credentials on anything and everything. All the hashes that the hacker may have stolen are all now invalid because you've reset the passwords, you've reset your Kerberos tokens, and then you reset your passwords again. So once you're to that password reset phase, you've started restoring systems, then you're going to want to start, you know, very slowly into a zero trust kind of mode and start bringing systems back online. You got to be very, very cautious here, especially when you start opening things up to the internet. But I would bring systems online internally first, where it only can connect to and from your EDR, and that's it, until you're confident that there's no other threat actor activity. Once you've said, okay, threat actor activity is gone, okay, let's open the firewall up to connect to Microsoft Office services, or let's open it up to connect to whatever other SaaS platform, and just slowly start opening those connections up. And, you know, again, you want to just follow that zero trust model as best you can. You know, and all, as part of this too, you're going to want to bring up all those VPN connections again, slowly but surely. But again, you have to make sure that all of those systems are fully eradicated, cleaned, whatever you want to call it, before you bring up those VPN connections. So you bring up those VPN connections kind of one at a time, monitor for any kind of threats, no threats, okay, great, bring up the next one, so on and so forth. And then moving forward, you know, you don't necessarily need all traffic of all types traversing your VPN tunnels, right? If you get a VPN tunnel because of some internal application, okay, we'll only allow that application traffic over the VPN tunnel. Don't just open it up to any service and anything that you want. Lock it down by IP and port, right? If that's all it needs. Now, if you have other things going on, then yeah, you're going to have to build a bigger list. But of course, Active Directory, you're going to still want to have DNS potentially or any other kind of directory syncs going on between domain controllers and fun stuff like that. And then yeah, from there, it's just kind of slowly bringing systems up and monitoring for any kind of threats. And if you see anything, you're going to want to shut it down very, very quickly. But these are very high level steps of things that you want to go through. One thing I forgot to mention at the beginning is, how do you communicate with with other people in your organization? One thing you do not want to do is use your company email or use your company, you know, Microsoft Teams. You do not want to use those because you don't know if they're compromised. If your email is compromised and you're using it to talk about the bad guy who's in your email, well, they're going to know what your next step is. So you want to make sure that you take your conversations offline into some, I shouldn't say offline, take them, you know, to some other system that is not business owned, right? Something like Signal or Wire or some other sort of encrypted chat application. And this is, again, is something you want to pre-plan. So as you're doing your incident response tests, what you would do is have a Signal group already set up with all of the leaders that you need to communicate with in an incident like this. That way, when an incident happens, you can reach out via Signal or Wire, whatever you decide to use, right away. And that group is already established, so you can continue your conversations there. You definitely don't want to use your company email or company chat, especially if you don't know if those are compromised. Other big considerations too is, you know, what about all your SaaS platforms? How do you make sure that those are clean and eradicated? Especially if you don't have something like single sign-on set up. Well, that's another case where you'd have to go and just reset passwords. You know, single sign-on really helps with this kind of stuff, but if you don't use single sign-on, it's going to make it tough. You know, you're going to have to get on there and just reset passwords, all that kind of fun stuff. And, you know, reach out to that vendor too and say, hey, what are the best practices in this type of situation? So that's kind of, again, just super high level, you know, a very basic incident response kind of playbook. You can build off of that quite a bit and add a ton to that. But when the threat actors gain access, once they get that initial foothold, The typical process is they gain access, they escalate privileges, right? And then from there, they look to exfiltrate data. From there, they look to encrypt your data. So they're going to try to exfil first. And one of the very common techniques for exfil is using, you know, something like DNS tunneling, where it makes it look like it's just DNS traffic. So these are things that you should be alerting on in your firewall as well to say, hey, all of a sudden today I've got this massive spike of 300 terabytes of data for DNS traffic. That's a you know, pretty big red flag that, hey, guess what? Someone's doing some DNS tunneling and you don't know about it. So you want to try to have those kind of alerts set up in your firewall for those kinds of anomalies and hope that your firewall has that kind of detection capabilities. If it doesn't, may want to look at a newer firewall that does have that. And of course, all of the other, you know, very basic things like multi-factor still apply. Want to make sure you got multi-factor everywhere, right? Anything and everything should be SSO'd with multi-factor. Anything that you cannot, then you want to make sure you've got a compensating control of some sort. So anyway, yeah, that's kind of just super high level instant response that you can build off of and just continue to test and use that kind of as a template. But hope that you never have to use it, because it is definitely not fun when those things happen. And look, it happens a lot. You know, you can go to, there's a site called ransomlook.io. There's a lot of interesting information out there that shows you, like, you know, kind of, I don't want to say real time, but, you know, it's fairly real time information about ransomware posts on the dark web and on Twitter and things like that, that, you know, you can see this is happening all day, every day. You know, there's so many companies that are getting hit with ransomware every single day. And, you know, it just makes it that much harder to defend, especially with, you know, all the phishing that happens, all those kinds of things. But, you know, hackers can get in a lot of different ways. And it just takes a little bit of luck, some sort of misconfiguration on a firewall or on a server. And before you know it, boom, they're in. And then from there, they can escalate privileges and take over. So all very scary stuff, but they're going to try to exfil data first. Once they escalate privileges, exfil data, and then try to encrypt you. And they're going to go after your backups too. That's another big part of this. They want to try to go after your backup servers and try to encrypt them too, so that you cannot restore a backup, and, you know, more, I guess, reason for them to get you to pay the ransom. So if you have any kind of a backup system, if you have any kind of backup system that's connected to your network, you want to make sure that it's not integrated with Active Directory. Now, that's an easy, so if they compromised your, you know, they're stealing hashes on your network and replaying hashes and escalating privileges, they may already have, you know, one of the accounts or a domain admin account, and they can give themselves access to your backup systems. So make sure that your backup systems are not domain joined. Make sure that they've got strong passwords. Make sure that you also have offline copies of those backups that are replicated, you know, however frequently you decide, but make sure you've got an offsite, offline replicated copy of all of your systems. And you can do all backups all different kinds of ways. I'm not going to get into those, but you definitely want to try to have a backup of anything and everything you possibly can, because this can and will happen. And it's very, very scary. But you can take some pretty easy steps to, you know, lock down your backup systems. A lot of times too, people, you know, they'll spin up, let's say Veeam, for example, and they just leave the default setting. And that's what gets you in trouble. You think, oh, the defaults are good. But little did you know, oh, there's SSH turned on, or there's some other service that's turned on that you had no idea about. And that's an easy way for the hacker to get into that backup system. Oh, you had SSH on. Oh, cool. I can just SSH in and hope that you didn't change the SSH password. So speaking of ransomware, there's some new articles that came out here recently about a lot of these ransomware gangs are now just doing straight up exfil. They're not even trying to encrypt data anymore, which is interesting to see. A little bit of a shift in their MO, I guess. But Hunters International Ransomware Group, they're apparently a ransomware as a service operation. They are rebranding. That's right. They are rebranding to switch to a data theft and extortion only type of attack. So that's very interesting that they're going to move away from the encryption piece. So I don't know what's making them think that this is the better strategy. You would think that encryption is much more, I don't know, likely that you would get some sort of ransom paid, because they can't decrypt their stuff. If you're just stealing data and you're going to post it online, okay, I mean, well, I guess we'll see how successful they are, right? You just never know, but interesting to see that that's kind of the shift in some of these ransomware gangs' focus now. So they're called Hunters International, and they are going to just steal data and, you know, extort you for it. Cool, right? There's some other, you know, crazy ransomware stuff too. It's funny that even the ransomware gang's websites can get hacked. Everest ransomware, their dark web leak site, was defaced and it's now offline. So that's kind of an interesting interesting thing to see, that even the bad guys get hacked, right? So they've got their website defaced, and I guess they shut it down. So that's kind of funny to see. And then some more ransomware fun stuff. The Port of Seattle said that they had a ransomware breach and it impacted 90,000 people. So this is a yet another ransomware attack that's affecting affecting us, right? Because who knows what data they stole about you, but you can imagine anything that this company has, it could be, who knows, personal information, social security numbers, all kinds of fun stuff. But and the Port of Seattle is a U.S. government agency, by the way, and oversees Seattle's seaport and airport. And they're apparently notifying 90,000 people of a data breach because their personal information was stolen in August of last year. Why in the heck they're just now telling us 6 months later, heck, more than 6 months later, 8 months later, is a bit concerning, but I guess at least they're telling us? I don't know. Seems like it's a little too late here. But regardless, they finally disclosed the attack. And anyway, this is just one more notch in the chain for all of the ransomware guys. And again, you go to ransomlook.io, you can see these happening all the time. And it seems to be never ending here, but anyway, what can you do to stop it? That's probably the bigger question that I think, really should be answered. I'm really shocked that it's 2025. We haven't even figured out phishing yet. So I don't have a whole lot of hope that we'll figure out ransomware anytime soon either. It just takes one little foot in the door and there they go. And, companies rely on legacy systems all the time. You see this happening constantly where, they'll hack into some old legacy system that can't be updated and then, boom, just pivot from there to wherever they want. Very, very common stuff. All right, so we can jump over to the cryptocurrency world. And my goodness, have all the markets really taken a dive here lately. Not just the crypto market, but it's pretty much all of it right now. Bitcoin, as of today, is down to 79,946. Ethereum's at about 1,600. Ripple's at $1.94. So it's all going down, 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 down. Which, I guess is kind of to be expected because the stock market appears to be doing pretty much the same thing. So they're saying a lot of the doomsdayers are saying, oh, we're in a recession now and all that. Yeah, we probably are. It's about time for that. So my guess is that you'll probably see Bitcoin, I would guess it's probably going to get down to 50, maybe even 40K. I don't know. It's hard to say because we just don't know how bad this pullback is going to be. I think you'll initially see it drop down to the high 60s, and if this recession is as bad as people are saying, you may see it drop down to into the 50s for Bitcoin. So we'll see how it goes. It's all kind of speculation anyway, and I'm certainly no financial expert, but that would be my guess of kind of where it's heading. So I would expect to see much more sell-off and much more dip in the prices of all cryptos, because Bitcoin's the leader, everything else just falls in line. They're also saying too that part of the dip here is due to all these tariff concerns, which I don't know how that affects crypto, but it's affecting all the markets. And so, which, is to be expected, I think, a little bit, because it's kind of an unknown here. We've not really done tariffs in the past, and yeah, people don't know what's going to happen. So people are being cautious and they're taking their money out, right? Because we just don't know what these tariffs are going to do. But I think as with anything, we all adapt, right? Doesn't matter what it is, if it's anything in life, that we just adapt and overcome. And I think that's going to happen here too with the tariffs. It's just a matter of, kind of letting it play out. It may take 6 months. It may take a year. Who knows? But the tariffs aren't the end of the world here, like everybody's saying. It's going to be a change. But hey, things have to change sometimes. And that's just the way life is. Life is all about change. And how do you adapt to that change? How do you face that change head on and get better? And that's what everybody will end up doing in the long run. But people are freaking out and speculating, and none of that helps either. So we will see kind of what happens. But I wouldn't get all doom and gloom, because, you know, that doesn't necessarily help either. It's just going to stress you out. So, yeah, don't go look at any crypto news today, because it's all doom and gloom pretty much. All right, folks, that's all I got for today. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk again soon.